Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here's your host, Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN DataCast. I'm your host this week, Alex Blickle. I'm our director of analytics here at FTN. So going to take things in a little bit of a different direction this week, filling in for the sick Adam Pfeiffer. And if you're coming for the traditional game-by-game breakdown, you can find all of that great stuff, as always, in the Read Option series. Both Adam Pfeiffer and Adam Strangis this week did their typical phenomenal job with all of that good stuff. What I want to do instead here today is zoom in on a few of these matchups that I think really just highlight some pretty fascinating football matchups, really get deep down into the nitty-gritty with those matchups. And so we're going to highlight just a few. If you want the breakdown of every single game, remember, you can always find that at FTN Fantasy in the Read Option series. So before we start, let's talk for a moment about DVOA, just because I'm going to be referencing DVOA quite a bit on this show. So let's just have a little bit of a reminder of why we should even care about DVOA. And I think the best way to describe it is that DVOA is meant to strip away the randomness and the variance of football and leave us with an answer to the question, how well has this team actually played? And I think a really great way to illustrate this concept is if you recall in the Week 2 matchup between Philadelphia and Minnesota, before the end of the first half, Minnesota, Kirk Cousins throws the ball downfield to Justin Jefferson. Jefferson makes a catch across the field, is lunging for the end zone, diving for the end zone. And right before he's able to outstretch his arms and the ball across the goal line, he fumbles it, goes out of bounds in the end zone for a touchback. Philadelphia, just to add insult to injury, is able to come down, kick a last second field goal, really turn the game from, you know, being a very close contested matchup to Philadelphia eventually able to really create some breathing room and kind of separate it in the second half. And so when you think about what this simple singular play was, it was about 99% really good offense, completing a pass deep down the field, Jefferson creating separation like few other receivers can, nearly scoring, 99% great offense, 1% fluky mistake to fumble in that exact way, at that exact moment, at that exact part of the field. So 99% great play, 1% fluke mistake. And yet from an outcome perspective, it was 100% catastrophic for Minnesota, right? And so what DVOA does is it separates the randomness and the disconnect between what actually happened and how the results played out. And consequently, it's not only a great way to determine how a team has played, but not coincidentally, but conveniently, it's therefore also one of our best ways to answer the question, how well do we expect them to play moving forward? And so DVOA really helpful from a predictive standpoint, even though it was maybe designed to be more descriptive than anything else. So with that, let's dive into some of these specific matchups that we really take an interest in this week. And I think the number one, we're going to give an honorable mention first to the Washington and Atlanta game. And if you're like me and you're thinking, what is possibly interesting about this game, know that I was very surprised too. And in fact, that exact surprise is why I want to give this game this honorable mention shout out. And it starts with an interest in Sam Howell. 2 weeks ago against the Eagles, he played some of his best football. Now, this is a guy, if you're not familiar yet with Howell's ways of getting sacked, let's put it that way, he's on a historic pace in terms of the amount that he's been sacked this season, and he's showing no signs whatsoever of slowing down. Now, in this matchup against Philadelphia, he did by far his best job of the early season in making decisive decisions early in his dropbacks, getting the ball out. Maybe it wasn't to the ideal guy, but he was making good decisions. He was getting the ball out quickly. Their offense was really moving the ball a lot better than I, as an Eagles fan, by the way, wanted to see. But then he goes the next week. He's facing a Chicago defense that obviously is not going to get pressure as often as this Philadelphia team. And he was making the same mistakes that he had made for the first few weeks of the season, was holding the ball too long, resulted in mistakes. Yes, he put up this massive box score at the end of the game, but it was a 42-20 loss to Chicago. Obviously not what you're looking for there. It was almost as if knowing that the pressure from the defensive front of Philadelphia, knowing that that pressure was coming, actually forced Howell to elevate his game, made him more decisive. And I'm very interested to see now that we get another matchup against an Atlanta team. They blitz 25% of the time. They only get pressure 26% of the time. Does he start to hold the ball too long again, waiting for something to happen? Or does he become more decisive, start getting the ball out to some of his really great weapons in McLaurin, Dotson, etc.? So very interested in this game from that point of view. More interested in this game from the Atlanta offense point of view. It might surprise you to hear, because it certainly surprised me when I found this in my own research. Desmond Ridder is 14th in deep passing yards. 14th for a guy who really doesn't throw the ball deep very often and certainly doesn't throw the ball often, period. The other great part of this aspect is when he throws deep, we can be pretty confident about who he's throwing deep to. Drake London is 13th in the NFL in deep receiving yards. And you know, we saw him come on pretty strong at the end of last season, earned himself an underdog ADP nearing the top 40. And obviously his production hasn't been quite what people wanted to this point this season. Maybe this is the matchup, because Washington, dead last, they've allowed by far the most deep passing yards and a 69% plus 69% DVOA against deep passing. Remember, all positive numbers for a defense are bad for the defense, good for opposing offenses. So just all around quite bad. And certainly it just fits the mold of what Drake London is best at doing, and apparently what Desmond Ridder is best at doing as a quarterback himself. So honorable mention to this game. I think that, number one, the matchup for Howell is just really interesting. Which Howell do we get? And then very interesting from the Atlanta side, because maybe we see some more fireworks through the air than we have come to expect from this team. That would be a really nice sign. And I know a lot of people with Drake London on their fantasy teams would absolutely love to see that type of eruption finally at this point here in week 6. All of that said, it is nowhere near as fascinating of a game to me, and probably to most, as Seattle and Cincinnati. Let's start with the Cincinnati side of things, because we probably have the largest question marks here. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase coming off a massive performance, easily their best team offensive game, also the two best individual games for those two guys to this point this season. Of course, the big concern for Burrow all season has been his calf issue and his ability to push the ball downfield with such a calf issue. So this matchup with Seattle in particular is really interesting. Seattle, 30% DVOA against deep passing. They've allowed the 8th most deep passing yards, 28% blitz rate for this defense, a 34% pressure rate. Pretty solid pressure rate for the Seahawks. Maybe we wouldn't have expected that coming in to the year, but I will say that 34% pressure rate very much needs an asterisk. Why? Because they played Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. Playing Daniel Jones and the New York Giants has to be worth at least like 3 to 5 percentage points of pressure rate at this point in the year. So maybe the pass rush isn't quite as good as that number would indicate, but we'll see, because Burrow certainly looked a little bit more aggressive down the field last week and certainly more mobile in the pocket last week. But can he do that against a solid offense or a solid defense? Apologies, by the way, for my voice. I'm coming off the COVID IL here, so bear with me if I have to pause at any moment in time to mute my mic and cough or anything of that nature. Back to this matchup. So very interested to see how the Cincinnati offense comes off their best performance. And certainly I think that will help answer the question, did they perform so well last week because this was a much different Cincinnati offense, a more aggressive Cincinnati offense, and a more aggressive Joe Burrow? Or was it just because, you know what, Arizona defense might stink? They've been pretty atrocious against the pass in a lot of ways. On the other side of the ball, we have Seattle. This offense, probably, at least to me, they have gone under the radar in terms of how good, how proficient they have been. They're 6th in points per game. They're 8th in total offensive DVOA, and they're 7th in offensive passing DVOA. If you asked me to compare their offense this year to last year, before diving into these numbers and taking a real good look at their numbers offensively, I would have said that they've taken a step back of some sorts. It's really not the case. They have been great offensively. Cincinnati presents a really interesting matchup for them. Reason being, Cincinnati blitzes quite a lot. 37% of the time, that's the 4th highest blitz rate in the league. Only getting pressure 33% of the time. It's a solid pressure rate, but perhaps it should be a little bit higher given how often they're blitzing. Now, this is so interesting because as great as Geno has been over the last year and a half, perhaps he's not quite as good when blitzed. This year, just a 6.5 yards per attempt average when blitzed, down obviously from his standard, which is a little bit difficult to understand conceptually, right? Because what's one thing that you ask your secondary to do when you are blitzing? You're asking them to hold up in some one-on-one situations. And for Geno Smith to have guys like Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, you would expect those guys to take advantage of any one-on-one situation that they are presented. So the fact that Geno hasn't been better when blitzed, a little bit surprising, just because you would expect the presence of Metcalf and Lockett to kind of elevate his numbers, even if he himself wasn't doing anything special against the blitz. So really interesting to see how that dynamic plays out. Does Cincinnati ramp up the blitz because they know that Geno doesn't handle it that well, or are they afraid to blitz because even though Geno hasn't been great against it to this point, it's always a risk to put yourself in one-on-one situations against these dynamic receivers. Meanwhile, Cincinnati also struggling, just like Seattle, against the deep ball. 7th most deep passing yards allowed to this point in the season. So there's just a lot to like here, right? Like it's one of those games. I think it has a massively wide range of outcomes. If you told me this game ended 17-14, 20-14, or something like that, I'd believe you. Both of these offenses have a path to being somewhat disappointing this week. However, if you told me this game was 45-42 at the end of four quarters, I would also believe you. Both of these offenses have a path to a crazy ceiling and a crazy amount of output. That just makes it so incredibly fascinating to me. Definitely the game that I will have my eyes on the most, just from a pure, you know, football intrigue perspective. One game that I don't think has the same type of downside offensively, but certainly could also produce some fireworks offensively, Chicago and Minnesota. Start on the Minnesota side of things, just like Cincinnati, there's an injury question here. Now, obviously, much bigger injury for Minnesota. Losing Justin Jefferson is about as impactful of an injury as you can possibly have in the National Football League. Time will tell what that offense looks like. How do they adjust to life without Justin Jefferson? Are they going to throw Jordan Addison into some form of the Justin Jefferson role? Or are they just going to say, you know what, there is no replacing Justin Jefferson. We've just got to try to be the best we can be with the guys we have. Only time will tell. However, if you're like me and you're thinking that this absence is definitely going to be felt and the Minnesota offense can't possibly produce at the level they've produced with him, maybe this isn't the week to start betting against this offense, because the Chicago defense can produce quite a bit of offense for you. Chicago has allowed the 2nd most deep passing yards, and they only get pressure 25% of the time. They're at a plus 94% DVOA against deep passing. Crazy high number. It's just a really good spot for the Minnesota offense, right? They can probably have success in any way that they want. Now, obviously, I project DVOA for each game using the existing data. Minnesota's at the 2nd highest number in projected passing DVOA at 54%. That does not account for the absence of Justin Jefferson, but it does give an indication of just, you know, how good this passing offense has been, and of course, how bad the passing defense has been for Chicago. Their defense is at plus 38% overall against the pass. Just a really, really atrocious number there. So if Minnesota continues to have success in this game, it certainly will not be any indication that their offense will not miss a beat without Justin Jefferson. Only time will tell, though. What's really fascinating about this game to me is on the other side of the ball. Justin Fields and this matchup with the Minnesota defense. And this whole matchup revolves around Brian Flores and his insanely aggressive ways so far as the defensive coordinator for Minnesota. He's blitzing 55% of the time. Now, this number was even higher. It was, I believe, at 67% prior to the matchup with Kansas City a week ago. As most people probably know, defenses have learned you just don't blitz Patrick Mahomes. No matter what, you do not blitz Patrick Mahomes. He's a magician at avoiding it. He's a magician at then, you know, ad-libbing and improvising and making plays down the field. So teams don't blitz him. Consequently, their blitz rate is actually down quite a bit to 55%, if you can believe it. For context, over the last few years, it's either been the New York Giants or the Baltimore Ravens leading the league in blitz rate around 40% of the time. So this 55% number is already through the roof, and it was even higher prior to last week's. Maybe it will go up after this week as well. Which brings us to the question of why. Why is Brian Flores blitzing this much? And I think the answer is actually rather simple. It's that he doesn't believe that they have the personnel to be effective in any other way. So he's not necessarily trying to slow down offenses. He's just trying to put his guys in position to make a play or two. The key play that turns around the game instead of allowing his defense to die a slow and painful death every possession, which probably is what would happen if he didn't blitz. Consider this. Despite their 55% blitz rate, they're only pressuring the quarterback 26% of the time. That's a really low number. So imagine how low it would be if they didn't have this historic blitz rate, right? If they were blitzing 30% of the time, that pressure rate might be in the teens. You just can't win in that way defensively. If you asked all 32 defensive coordinators around the league what the most important thing is for a defense, I bet you would get 32 coordinators saying the ability to pressure the quarterback. Minnesota cannot do that. They also don't have a secondary behind them that's all that good. So they're pretty much left in a lose-lose situation every snap. All Brian Flores can do is try and confuse the quarterback, try and create one or two mistakes a game that can really flip it into their favor, which, by the way, was definitely an easier proposition when they had an offense, such a high-powered offense like they do with Justin Jefferson. Now without him, you know, one or two big plays defensively might not even cut it in any given game. So they could be in a lot of trouble, but they could especially be in trouble in this game defensively, because for as many shortcomings as Justin Fields has as a quarterback, as a passer at the very least, he is fourth in the NFL at 8.8 yards per attempt when blitzed. So you have a quarterback who, for whatever reason, and I actually think we do know the reason, is so much better when blitzed than not, and you have a defense that is kind of forced into the situation where they have to blitz or they've got no chance. Now, let's get to Fields, and why might he be so good against the blitz? It's one of those situations where I actually think some, not coach speak, but player speak can really illuminate us here. Most of the time, I think when guys bout off to reporters or make excuses for poor play, we can kind of throw it to the side. But some Fields comments earlier this season, I think, ring really true now, which is he talked about how after a few weeks of just total struggles and this offense looking disastrous and he himself looking disastrous, he talked about how he felt like he wasn't just playing his game. Like he was too in his head. He was trying to think too much instead of just playing the game that he has played for so many years. And the reason I think this holds so much weight is because when you think about what a quarterback has to do when blitzed, all of that, right? Every single decision you make, it has to be anticipated. You have to be more reactive. You have to play instinctive football. And the more he can play on instinct instead of trying to process everything consciously and make specific decisions, the better off he seems to be. And so when he's blitzed, that's when he seems to be at his best. I think it also certainly doesn't hurt that when he's blitzed, it's easier for him to say, okay, where's DJ Moore? He's my first read. I'm throwing this ball to DJ Moore or I'm getting out of the pocket, right? And so that could be part of it too. It also means more likely that DJ Moore has single coverage on the play if blitzers are coming. All of that good stuff, I think, all comes together. And it certainly makes Justin Fields more effective when being blitzed. So this matchup could be a third straight outstanding offensive performance from Justin Fields. If you're in the DFS streets, make sure you're playing some Justin Fields and DJ Moore with me. I love this game from a DFS perspective. I love this game from a fantasy perspective. Might even have some bets on it as well. Just a really, really fascinating game, yes, but it's just one where, you know, if you're like me and you're just rooting for Justin Fields, this is a really exciting matchup. I think it's one where he can continue his recent string of success and start reversing the narrative that he's a complete failure and bust to this point in his career. Oh, one last thing about this matchup, just a really great nugget of information. Man, we have an embarrassment of riches here at FTN, don't we? Just all this fantastic data. One of my favorites is comparing the amount of time to throw that a defense allows with the average time it takes them to pressure the quarterback. Minnesota has one of the largest differences in average time to throw and time to pressure. You would think with all of this blitzing that they're able to pressure the quarterback somewhat quickly. They're not. It's taking them well over 3 seconds. The fastest teams like the Philadelphia Eagles are under 2.7 seconds. So over three, I believe they're around 3.2. Really poor. And that's especially problematic when, whether it's because they're blitzing so often or just because their secondary is so porous as a whole, when they are allowing such a low amount of time to throw, the lowest time to throw in the league, which basically just means guys are getting wide open early. And while there are some instances where a really fast time to throw means that teams aren't even trying to throw deep, we know that that's not the case, right? We know that Minnesota has been really bad against the deep ball. The third highest amount of deep passing yards allowed, it's certainly not that. The reason why opposing quarterbacks are throwing the ball so quickly against them is because they have open receivers so early in the play. Last but not least, we have the Carolina and the Miami game. And there's really only one thing about this game that's so fascinating to me, and it's the Miami rushing game and this specific matchup in that regard. This is such a funny one because one interesting thing about DVOA is that it's not adjusted where you're comparing all rushing plays to just rushing plays or all passing plays to just passing plays. It captures the effect that, look, teams are just better off passing. Passing is more efficient than rushing. So there are only 8 teams in the NFL that average above a 0% DVOA when running the ball. And conversely, there are only 5 teams in the NFL that allow a positive rushing DVOA. In this case, Miami is first in rushing, and Carolina is dead last defending the run. It's one of those instances where you just have strength on weakness to the umpteenth degree. 34% rushing DVOA from Miami. Like, that's just an absurd number for running the ball. And then a 22% DVOA allowed for Carolina against the run, also an absurd number. In fact, to contextualize this, once again, by projecting DVOA for these specific matchups, there's a tie for second in projected rushing DVOA. Seattle and Arizona are at plus 6%. For context, there are 12 offenses on this slate of games that are projected for at least a 20% passing DVOA. And yet second best rushing DVOA is just 6%. And then there's Miami at plus 56%. Miami's run game is projected to be as effective offensively as any other offense is through the air this week. Only Miami themselves have a higher projected pass DVOA than Miami's projected run DVOA. It's an absolutely absurd number. And yes, it's maybe too high because they're going to be missing Devon Achane. We will see exactly how impactful that absence is. My inclination is to say it actually will be really impactful. This rushing offense doesn't look like any other rushing offense. Obviously, the closest comparison is San Francisco, the way they use Deebo Samuel. But they have used Achane in so many creative ways, getting him the ball in space, whether it's on a toss or a jet sweep or an end around, whatever the case is, really using the threat of a run to Raheem Mostert to then free up Achane as a misdirection. He gets his speed in the open field, and there's no hope for the defense. Without Achane, interesting questions to be asked are, do they try and use Mostert in a lot of the ways they were using Achane, since Mostert has at least comparable speed? Does that mean that Jeff Wilson is going to jump into the Raheem Mostert role? Only time will tell. I feel like in this matchup, it's such a glaring mismatch that maybe they're going to save some of the fancy stuff for future games and just say, you know what, we can just turn around and run for days, just handing the ball to whether it's Wilson or Mostert back there with much more like traditional rushing sets. Maybe we won't see any of the fancy stuff as a result. Therefore, it might take us like 3 weeks to see exactly what this run game looks like without HN now that they have really hit their stride. I think the key point to realize here is the reason why rushing is sacrifices so much compared to passing is because most teams are sacrificing the potential for a big play whenever they hand the ball off. Yes, you have teams like Tennessee, you know, Derrick Henry for years, Nick Chubb for years in Cleveland. They have broken off their fair share of big runs. But it's typically, you know, you're either running for less than 10 yards or you happen to break one every now and then, whereas Miami's just getting chunk run after chunk run after chunk run. Yes, some of those are going all the way to the house, but they're still getting explosive plays even when they're not scoring touchdowns from the running game. It's so rare, and maybe that aspect of it will really suffer without HM. So that'll pretty much do it for the matchups. I think some really fascinating games. Just a quick recap. We want to see what Howell can do against this Atlanta defense that struggles to get pressure. Can he be more decisive? Can he start to take that next step as a passer? The production has been there. He looks great when he does throw the ball, but when he doesn't throw the ball, he's just holding it way too long, creating way too many negative plays in that regard. And then from the Atlanta side of things, can they create some chunk plays through the air in this matchup? Everybody has been able to do it against Washington. Can Atlanta follow suit? If they can't do it in this matchup, it might be a really, really long season for Drake London owners in fantasy across the board. The Cincinnati and Seattle game, just totally fascinating from every point of view. Is Joe Burrow healthy, right? It was last week a very real step in the right direction for this offense, or was it just a glimpse in the pan of what happens when you face Arizona and now back to some bad stuff? And then the Seattle offense, are they finally going to get the respect that they deserve? Geno Smith has been fantastic. This offense has been a lot better than I think people realize. The matchup with Cincinnati is quite good in some ways, but then there are also some ways that Cincinnati might have a matchup advantage. Geno's really going to have to step up against the blitz. Can he do that? Can he really lean into his superstar weapons on the outside to create some more success against the blitz? Can Justin Fields continue his improved play? The matchup certainly indicates that he can. We could see more fireworks from Fields, from DJ Moore. What an exciting offense that has become over the last few weeks. Can it continue? And then, you know, even if it does this week, there's still the question, can they do it against some better defenses? We can't answer that question this week, but we can answer just how explosive they can be in a matchup that fits them this well. And then, are we going to continue to see some historic performances out of the backfield in Miami? It's just so funny to stare at my projection sheet and see 6% and just a field of yellow and orange in projected rushing DVOA, which basically just means offenses are running the ball too much still. And then there's Miami with just this massive number, 56% projected DVOA on the running game. Hilariously high, and will be really fun to watch to see what this rushing offense looks like without Achan. You know, fantasy owners alike will be really keyed into this one. Is it Jeff Wilson's backfield? Is it Raheem Mostert's backfield? Do they have clear and distinct roles where Mostert is the big play speed guy on the outside and Wilson is the between the tackles guy, kind of like Mostert and Achan have become over the last couple of weeks? Or are they just comfortable mixing them in any way where, you know, 1 week it's going to be Mostert leading the way, the next week it's going to be Wilson? Only time will tell. But that's what we're looking for this week. Should be yet another great week of football. Thanks for tuning into the DataCast. And if you haven't yet done so, check out the package on ftndaily.com. NBA and NHL is here. There's one more day to take advantage of some discounted pricing. I believe it's $25 cheaper if you get in on it today, Friday, October 13th, than if you wait even another 24 hours. So get in on the action. NBA, you'll hear from me. You'll hear from Adam Pfeiffer. You'll hear from Zach Graham at Quisenberg DFS. And then, of course, the great Chris Meaney in the NHL streets. Check all of that out. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Datacast with Adam Pfeiffer. Be sure to follow your host on Twitter at apfeiffer24. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And we'll see you next time on the FTN Datacast, where data drives the discussion.